stumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You are in the 3 o'clock hour, so it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My special guest this afternoon is Dr. Caitlin Henderson, a senior researcher at Oxfam, the largest anti-poverty organization in the world. She and Oxfam have just released their report for this year called the Best States to Work Index, which looks at how states treat workers and working families across the U.S. Before the break, Katie, we were talking about right-to-work laws, which I always think is a really interesting name for these pieces of legislation, because everybody's like, well, right to work. Yes, that sounds good. I support everybody's got a right to work. But what does this legislation actually do? It should basically be called the anti-union bill instead of the right to work bill. It'd be great if you could explain.
Yeah, absolutely. So a right to work law is effectively a law that makes it harder to form and maintain unions. It sort of takes the teeth out of unions a little bit. It takes money away. It means that you no longer can require dues from your members. It makes it harder to unionize. It makes it harder to collectively bargain together. And it means that a lot of the benefits of unionization is pulled out from under them a little bit. It makes it a little bit weaker to be part of a collective unit when you're going to the bargaining table and trying to negotiate for things like benefits or salaries or working hours or pensions or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, just some of the specifics for folks at home. If you've heard this, what it means is that each year, any existing union has to effectively recertify. In other words, the membership has to say, yes, we want to continue to have a union, and people have the option to opt out and not have any of their wages go to union dues. All of that sounds really interesting and maybe a little appealing, except that, of course, what you have the sort of inertia element of this, because it requires an affirmative action by workers every single year. We all are suffer from inertia. We generally will tend to take fewer actions when all else is equal, so it's less likely workers do that. And also, you then run into a fundamental collective action problem. All workers benefit from the union bargaining, but if you're opting out, you're effectively shirking or free riding on the union benefits that your union provides to all workers for the most part. We could get into some specifics on that, but just wanted to let people get a little bit of a baseline there. So let's jump in. How is America doing overall for working people and working families?
Frankly, it really depends on where you live. Mm. One of the big reasons we did this index is because the federal or national standards are so low, and some states are doing so much to make things better that now there's widening inequality totally based on the geography of where you live. And that can include neighboring states, which is really complicated. In this country, where you live shouldn't mean whether or not you get paid a fair wage or whether you're protected at work. But increasingly, that is the situation because there hasn't been movement at the federal level. I think Wisconsin is actually a really good example, because Wisconsin neighbors two states that have much higher wages in Illinois and Minnesota. In both Illinois and Minnesota, there's paid leave. So you have the ability to have a paid sick day, not lose a paycheck if your child is sick. And in both Minnesota and Illinois, there's some stronger protections around the right to organize. So you can live 5 miles from the border of a different state and yet be paid significantly less and have significantly fewer protections. So as a country, we are really waiting for the federal government to step in and create a higher standard. But if you're living in Oregon or California, Washington State, DC, you're doing a lot better than some of your neighbors, which is honestly not super fair.
It's not super fair. It also, in Wisconsin, we hear from many of our business owners, Wisconsin's a great manufacturing hub of the United States. Businesses love to come here because our workers are skilled. We traditionally and reputationally work really hard and are incredibly productive. And yet you set up this sort of inequity and it will lead to brain drain or just worker drain. People will leave because they're not going to get the same level of wage and benefits as they would in some of our neighboring states. How is Wisconsin specifically doing on this best states to work index relative to some of our neighboring states and overall?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is ranked at 38 out of 52. So again, this is all 50 states, DC and Puerto Rico, if you're wondering where that 52 is coming from. So Wisconsin's in the lower half. And one of the big reasons for that is because a lot of Wisconsin's laws in regards to workers are reliant on the federal standard. Wisconsin has a minimum wage of $7.25, which is the federal standard. Wisconsin has no paid leave. Wisconsin doesn't extend many protections to workers that we consider federally excluded, like domestic workers. And Wisconsin is one of those right-to-work states that doesn't have many protections for unionization. I will say, and credit where credit is due, because I think it's important to identify where progress is needed, but celebrate where there is positive policies. Wisconsin steps up in a lot of ways for farm workers. And I think that's important to identify. Wisconsin is a great state when it comes to agriculture and farm working. And so there is some positive policies there. So we do see the potential for great policy change in Wisconsin, but there's still room to improve. You know, compared to some neighbors, Illinois is at number 7, Minnesota is at number 11. So it's wow. Quite a difference. Yeah.
We just have about 2 minutes left. What is the one or two policies that you think can really have the biggest impact for working people in the U.S.?
I think for all working people in the U.S. and Wisconsin as well, let's raise the wage. Let's raise the minimum wage. Let's get rid of the sub-minimum tipped wage, which yes. traps too many, especially women in cyclical poverty. Let's get some paid leave so people who have care responsibilities in their communities can miss a day of work to care for someone but not lose a paycheck. And let's really protect the right to organize. We know the union difference. It increases wages. It increases protection at work. You are safer. You're less likely to be injured. You have more benefits. It does matter. So if I was going to say three things, it is raise the wage, pass some paid leave, and let's protect the right to organize.
Folks, that's Dr. Caitlin Henderson, senior research at Oxfam, the largest anti-poverty organization in the world. They just published Oxfam's annual Best States to Work Index. Folks, Brian and I will put that in the blurb for today's show so you can check it out with your own eyes, but you heard it here. Raise the minimum wage, paid leave, which is a big old fat duh, right? And protect workers' rights to organize. Thank you so much for making time for us, Katie. I can't wait to have you back again. Stay tuned. The Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the Civic Media Network after these three messages.
Yeah.